Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Manu Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Saluau. I'm Charlotte Farrell, the host, and Saluau is where my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. Today, we have a treat for your mind on understanding how human rights issues in one part of the world, namely today we're talking about the Philippines, how they relate to a global impact, how they relate to and have a global impact on human rights. I'm going to be doing a brief introduction of our guest, and then we'll be getting more information elicited by our public affairs director, Jesse, who's co-host with me today.
Hello.
Luffy Marwood is a member of the Vancouver-based Canada-Philippines Solidarity for Human Rights and the chairperson of International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines. Gloria Nasari is a Filipino community organizer with Akbayan Joyce, a local chapter of the grassroots comprehensive youth math organization in the Philippines. She was born and raised in Canada with two immigrant parents. The third person we're going to be hearing from throughout the interview is Kara Phoenix. Kara is the Alliance of Solidarity co-lead of Migranti BC, a grassroots Filipino migrant workers organization focusing on the rights of Filipino migrant workers and their families. Kara has been organizing with progressive Filipino youth, women, and migrant organizations for national democracy since 2020, when former President Rodrigo Duterte passed the Anti-Terror Act, a law that some of you might remember, a law that's been increasingly misused against journalists, human rights advocates, workers, youth, and Filipino people from all walks of life. The work that you're going to be hearing about today, we think will be applicable to you as we are working to have more community people aware of human rights issues, more people aware of the attacks on journalism globally, and ways that we can work together to keep democracy from being erased and eroded in our work. So go to Jesse has a few things that he wants to ask.
Thanks, all three of you, for joining us this morning. I wanted to ask, before we jump in to talking about some of the specific things that have brought you here, some events and things, I just thought it would be good to get some context and background, and maybe starting with you, Luffy. Can you provide a little bit of history and context for our listeners who might not be familiar with the Philippines, the ongoing battle for human rights, and sort of the history of this whole situation?
Yeah, so I am part of the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines, which is a global organization. It's a coalition of organizations actually working to champion human rights causes in the Philippines and to also campaign for just and lasting peace in the country. And so we have a Canada chapter that is called ITRIP Canada. And so the issues that So the human rights issues in the Philippines, it has been ongoing for decades now, even going back to the administration of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo in the early 2000s. But I think in the global space, I think people have become like more aware of like human rights issues in the Philippines when President Duterte came into power in 2016, and he was very infamous for the war on drugs, which have claimed the lives of up to 30,000 people, and he's actually currently under investigation by the International Criminal Court for those crimes. And then, so under Duterte's presidency, he enacted a couple of mechanisms that essentially ramped up attacks against activists and human rights defenders and journalists. So one of those provisions is the what is called Executive Order 70. It's the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict. So it's a whole of government approach that is supposed, they say it's supposed to address the communist insurgency in the country, but in reality, it ends up targeting activists across various sectors, including journalists, human rights defenders, workers, youth and students, even health workers. And so and then also in 2020, the anti-terrorism law was passed. So that it kind of adds on to that. It gave the government, or at least the executive branch of the government, from what I remember, power to unilaterally designate certain individuals or organizations as terrorists, and where the evidence is kind of unclear. So that's kind of the context. So under those laws, there have been, it has basically put together, those mechanisms have created a chilling effect in the Philippines, not just in terms of journalism, but also in terms of community organizing. There is this phenomenon in the Philippines known as red tagging, where if you are an activist, sometimes you are accused, sometimes by people in your community. You basically, like, these activists get like death threats or intimidated by local government forces, or even state for or even like the government forces themselves. So that has really affected a lot of activism. Like, a lot of the people who are affected by this red tagging end up getting harassed by the state. In some cases, they have been politically imprisoned, so they get put in jail on various kinds of trumped up charges. In some cases, unfortunately, many have been killed extrajudicially, and some have, at least in the recent years under the current president, who's the President Bongbong Marcos Jr., there have been a couple of people who have been forcibly disappeared. Just to bring that back to our topic today on journalism, there have also been attacks on journalism. I think Pia herself, who will be speaking at the McLuhan event tonight, she was actually known for her coverage of the Duterte administration, and I believe at some point she was barred by the Malacañang Palace from reporting because of her critical reports of the administration. Hopefully that gave a bit more of a context regarding the human rights situation in the country.
And why do you think that's particularly important for Vancouverites, Canadians, to know about?
Yeah, so for Canada, actually, we are, the Canadian government is developing their relationship with the Philippine government, and it's mostly under, part of it is under the framework of the Indo-Pacific strategy, which is sort of Canada's strategy, economic and sometimes military, around the Indo-Pacific region. And one of those countries that Canada is making deals with and increasing the partnership with includes the Philippines. And so part of the Indo-Pacific strategy my organization is concerned about is the enhanced defense cooperation with the Philippines. So what that looks like is that currently Canada has started participating in some of the military exercises around the Philippines, and currently they're negotiating this agreement called the Status of Visiting Forces Agreement, which would basically determine the rules of engagement for when Canadian troops visit the Philippines for exercises or other purposes. And then the second thing that we are concerned about is mining, because under the Indo-Pacific strategy, the Canadian government has called out their interest in critical minerals in the Philippines. And historically, Canadian mining companies have actually been responsible for various human rights violations in the Philippines, particularly in the areas. There are some areas in the Philippines that where there are like indigenous Filipinos and some Canadian mining companies have operated in their communities and essentially caused like environmental devastation. They kind of pollute their local water sources, which kind of affects like a lot of the indigenous people around there, who most of whom are like farmers and fisher folks. So a lot of their food sources are from, you know, fishing and like farm cultivating on these lands that are contaminated. And in some cases also these communities have also faced like demolitions for mining operations. So tying it back to like why we should care is also that some of the people that have been speaking out to these human rights violations around mining have been attacked by the state. So often we have found that the state, the Philippine government, sides with the interests of these Canadian mining companies and other mining companies instead of the interests of the people there. So the local land defenders and activists who protest against these mining operations, some of them have been, you know, red tagged, accused of being members of like terrorist groups. And yeah, I think some have been like, you know, arrested or even killed. And then also the connecting it to the defense cooperation aspect is that one of the biggest human rights violators in the Philippines is the armed forces of the Philippines themselves. So currently they're doing a lot of they're implicated in a lot of human rights violations, particularly among like peasant communities in the Philippines. There have been reports from our partner organization in the Philippines called the Karapatan Human Rights Alliance that there's been a lot of militarization in the rural areas. There's been in some cases even like reported bombings and strafings of rural areas. So yeah, I think because, you know, the Philippine military is conducting these activities, we are concerned that, you know, if Canada is going to be providing, whether it's technical or even material support to the Philippine military, where is that going? Like, we want to make sure that that kind of aid is not being used to like aid and abet these human rights violations.
Of course.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. That's a good insight into both, like, as I asked initially, some context for the situation, but also why it directly matters here, because there are, direct implications in terms of the Canadian government and by extension Canada, sort of, as you said, potentially aiding and abetting some of these abuses. I want to just move on quickly to Glory. Can you tell us a little bit about the organization Anak Bayan and the Joyce outpost installment of Anak Bayan?
Yeah, for sure. So Anak Bayan, it's a comprehensive youth organization. So basically, we advocate for the rights of youth and students. And we connect sort of the rights and welfare of Filipinos in the diaspora here. And specifically in my chapter, the Joyce Collingwood chapter, we recognize that Joyce Collingwood has historically been a very culturally important area for Filipinos. A lot of Filipinos have settled there. And now there is sort of gentrification happening in that area, forcing working class Filipinos and their families, so children, youth, to move farther and farther out of the city due to like economic reasons mainly, and like redevelopment of the neighborhood. So less family units, along with like redevelopment of the SkyTrain area in the Joyce neighborhood. So we try to connect the issues that Filipino youth face here with the same issues that youth in the Philippines face, and in recognition that many youth leave the Philippines not because they want to, but for mainly for economic reasons. Like an example would be a lot of youth can't find job opportunities in the Philippines because of mishandling by the government, not having employment opportunities and even like education opportunities for youth. So a lot leave the Philippines and enter sort of like the international student pathway, which has been a common pathway for immigration in the recent years to Canada as well. And we're seeing sort of the Canadian government put a halt to that in recognition that like, even though these students and migrant workers contribute a lot to our economy, they're being scapegoated and blamed for a lot of the issues that people face here, including like housing affordability and prices of goods here in Canada, even though they're the main ones that hold up the economy. They're being blamed for these things like that. So as an organization, we sort of tried to raise consciousness about the fact that it's not the fault of immigrants and migrants, but more so the system that exists of capitalism in Canada, and try to connect those issues for youth back home in the Philippines.
Yeah, I think it's really important to see it all as one connected system of exploitation and economic, well, global capitalism, right?
Exactly.
Thanks, Glory. And Kyra, can you tell us a little bit about Migrante BC, the work the organization does and how you fit into that work?
For sure. Migrante BC is very closely allied with Anakbayan BC, actually under Bayan, which is an alliance of progressive Filipino organizations from all different sectors working for national democracy and, you know, better life in the Philippines so that we can actually stay there. This is a lot of where the advocacy of Migrante BC comes from too, focusing on the rights of Filipino migrant workers and their families, with a specific focus especially on, you know, the deeply rooted issues of the socioeconomic struggles faced by the people in the Philippines, and the challenges then of the migrant life here in Canada, but really just trying to, see what is our right to organize, what is our right to advocate for fair treatment in the workplace and the communities here, but then also, why did we have to come here in the first place? Also fighting for an end to forced migration by continuing the fight for national liberation and genuine democracy in our homeland. We have, several members of Migrante BC that are very tied to what is, even though they're here, whether they're PR or citizens or newcomers, we're still very tied to what's happening back home. Still concerned about the welfare of our country and our kababayan there. We have several members too that were red tagged or victims of human rights abuses, of what Luffy was talking about earlier as well. And I think all of these pieces of the human rights and then the workplace issues and then migrants issues here in Canada, it all kind of comes together because, yeah, I originally joined organizing because of the Anti-Terror Act when it was passed in 2020. And I was like, well, wait a minute. This sounds not okay for anyone involved. And we've just seen it become increasingly worse over the past 5 years. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of that advocacy going around there. And we're continuing to have ongoing campaigns for know your rights. What are the workplace issues? How do you unionize? But then also anti-labor trafficking campaigns, because Filipinos are the third largest immigration population here in Canada. And we've seen from the East Coast to the West Coast, various unscrupulous recruitment agencies capitalizing off of that, capitalizing off of Filipino labor and our people, and seeing them just as commodities to be disposed of afterwards, after they get their funds. So on both ends, we leave our country because the socioeconomic conditions aren't very good here. We come here and so many migrant workers are being exploited and abused, and don't often have a venue to know their rights when they first come to this new country. I think that's where a lot of our, the three of our organizations, I guess, are quite intertwined in those aspects.
We're looking at the Marshall McLuhan event that's happening tonight and the ability to let people know more about that award and more about how they can be involved. Because, as you said, the grassroots community and the newspaper, the basic journal, forms of news people get, a lot of it's commercial news or it's news owned by particular platforms. So what are some of the ways or things that you're doing to connect the community, make them more aware of opportunities to know more about the issues in the Philippines, but to know more about what anyone in Canada needs to do and know so that we aren't aware or we're not saying, you know, not questioning why time is being spent on this particular group when there are so many other problems that are distracting? What are some of the things tonight that you are hoping to have continued beyond the community meeting?
Yeah, maybe I can start. So yeah, the topic Pia is speaking on tonight will be, I think, on community-based, I think it's on community, sorry, building community around journalism in order to kind of protect it in the age of AI. And I think, a lot of her talk, I haven't actually heard her talk, I just have a sort of a preview of it, but I think a lot of her conversation will be about how, you know, like the changes in the media landscape in the last decade, the transition from more and more people consuming, like getting news from social media, getting news from like short form media, whether it's like TikTok or Instagram Reels, things like that. And I think, yeah, there are some, I mean, I'm not a journalist, but from my view, like there are some advantages to that in which where more and more people have access and are able to create their own media and I guess propagate important information that maybe like big newsrooms will not necessarily talk about. But there are also concerns about, I think there are also like changes in the advertising landscape. So there's like concerns that especially local independent journalists might have. There's also, I think one of the big concerns is also like misinformation and particularly disinformation. Like that's really like, it's kind of a double-edged sword where, yeah, people can participate and more now and get the news from social media, but also like the kind of the fact checking is a little bit more difficult when you're like seeing things on social media. And actually, I think that actually has also contributed to a lot of like a lot of the misinformation is really tied to the like the human rights situation also in the Philippine government. Like there's like a lot of misinformation around these activists and the causes they're fighting for, that our organizations and for Migrante and Anak Bayan, their counterparts back home in the Philippines, need to combat. I think what we've been, at least for us, most of our information avenues and information have been through social media. We are trying to work more. I think we are collectively making an effort to work more with local media to help propagate our issues and build relationships with the community as well. We also often hold like different types of community forums where people can get together and also hear in more detail about the issues that we're facing and where people can help.
And at the event tonight, it was kind of suggested that you are reaching out or sharing with the community some ways they can be involved. Could you share two or three things that are going to be highlighted as ways for the community groups to get involved that we won't hear. People won't hear until later. But sometimes people, our show is posted on at cjsf.ca. And sometimes during the week, people can go back and they can find the link, or you would have a link that you could send groups. But we just want to see what you were hoping to achieve by inviting the community to come out and hear what you're presenting this evening.
I think I can start with that. So I think during the event tonight, one of our organizers will be talking about the case of Frenchie May Cumpio. So Frenchie May is a journalist who have been who have actually been detained in the Philippines since 2020. So yeah, so she's been detained in the Philippines since 2020. She was I think she was yeah, she was working with local media, and she has been detained under charges of these are trumped up charges of financing terrorism and illegal possession of firearms. And like these trumped up charges are, like her case is not isolated. She is just one of the many political prisoners in the Philippines who get arrested and then they get charged with these dubious charges, either like the state plants some sort of evidence on them, or the anti-terror law. The government kind of weaponizes this law to keep these progressive individuals in prison. So I actually don't know if we have like a next step plan for her, but I think one of the things that she will need she might need support with is her legal fund. And so for now, if folks are interested in getting in supporting that, or like finding out how they can support, they can reach out to us at CPSHR.
Slower, slower. Somebody,
Oh yeah,
people have to
they
get their
can.
pen.
Oh, sorry. They can reach out to us at CPSHR. So you can email us at cps.humanrights@gmail.com, or you can message us on Instagram at cps.vancouver. We have connections with some human rights organizations in the Philippines, as particularly one which works with the family and friends of the political prisoners. So together we can figure out a way to maybe support her either like politically, morally, or financially. I guess I also want to plug that CPSHR has been conducting a campaign around political prisoners. The person we have been focusing on is not actually a journalist. We are currently mainly campaigning on a union organizer called his name is Mao Chimaga. He was arrested in 2018. He's a union organizer with a trade union federation in the Philippines called Kilusang Mayo Uno, so that's KMU. And at the time, he was organizing basically transport workers in the Philippines. And he was arrested in 2018 while he was playing basketball. He was basically stopped by some plainclothes policemen, and he was arrested under charges of firearms possession. But the so-called the firearm in question was actually a gun that was planted in his backpack. Although that charge was overturned in 2022, I believe, the state has like put on more charges just to keep him in prison. I think one of those includes like murder. He was charged for murder in a place in the Philippines which he's never even been to. So we have been doing a lot of campaigning around that locally. We have actually been working with some organizations in SFU on those efforts, mainly the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group. And recently we also did a movie screening with SFPERG and the SFU Students of Caribbean and African Ancestry about Black August. So we had a discussion with political prisoners there. And I believe we have a joint letter writing session for political prisoners coming up later this month. So you can follow us on Instagram at cps.vancouver for more information. I think we will be partnering with SFPERG for that event. Yeah, and then maybe for next steps, I don't know if either Kyra or Glory wants to talk about the International Working Women's Day panel this Saturday.
Let me stop a second and put in a plug to say you are hearing this program at cjsa.ca. That is the radio station of Simon Fraser University. It's a college and community station that helps independent writers, helps community events such as the ones that you're talking about helps to create unity. So we're so happy that we could have you today. And now we will go on to hear more about what is happening with the Marshall McLuhan event tonight and other comments that our other two guests have.
I can talk about International Working Women's Day. So yeah, I just mentioned Gabriella, which is a women's and LGBTQ organization, and they're helping to organize this event for International Working Women's Day, which is on March 8th, so this Saturday. And International Working Women's Day was originally like created to recognize women's contribution to factory strikes that in the 20th century due to like the worsening conditions for women specifically in working class workplaces. And it celebrates like the contributions of women, but also recognizes how the issues of women are not just based on gender, but also tied to class struggle. So exploitation and oppression of women in the workplace, and also highlights their contributions just to society in like non-workplaces, so like domestic situations, how women contribute to just the running of society and face just a lot of different exploitive conditions, including like sexual assault, inequality, and things like that. So on Saturday, it's a panel forum that's going to be held by Gabriella and different organizations that center around the issues of women and LGBTQ plus people. And it's going to be at St. Margaret's Cedar Cottage Church, which is in the East Vancouver area. And the panelists will talk about the different sectors that women belong to. So migrant women, working class women, youth women, and how they are affected by different conditions, including like poverty, gender-based violence, and how it's important for women and also just everyone to come together to create a sort of united front between all these different sectors to advocate for women's rights and highlight how much they contribute to society. And anything else?
I was going to ask, is that an event that you attend in person, or is it something that you can join by a Zoom link?
It's in person. Yeah, it's in person on Saturday, March 8th from 2 to 6 p.m. at St. Margaret's Cedar Cottage, which is off of Kingsway.
Repeat that once more.
Yeah, it's at on Saturday, March 8th, is the panel for A Woman's Work Is Never Done, the International Working Women's Day panel. It will be at the St. Margaret Cedar Cottage Church, which is off of Kingsway. There's parking around, but there's also it's also transit accessible.
And is there a cost?
It is free to attend, but donations are encouraged. It's being co-organized by several, led by Gabriella BC, but also co-organized with several other grassroots organizations. So donations are always welcome to help keep the work going.
Yeah, I so thank you for giving that history of International Women's Day, because when you look at the cards in the stores, it's all kinds of other things, jewelry, perfume. And when we mention women's rights as an issue, people think, oh, you want to pull new things into everything. So I'm so happy to share the information with our listeners, you know, that it's still time to hear about that event.
I can maybe add one last thing to act upon or a broad one too, just given that, you know, there are so many things that we're talking about, I guess, of like both the Marshall McLuhan Fellowship and then also, you know, the political prisoners campaigns and then also International Working Women's Day. I guess tying it back to the event that's going to be happening tonight on community building and how that helps support journalism. It's a call, I guess, to everyone listening to find your community, you know, to organize, to help raise the consciousness of your friends, your family, your coworkers, your peers, your fellow students. There are several organizations that we can be joining. We would love if you would join, either CPSHR or Anak Bayan or Migrante or Gabriela. But really, part of joining the organization too is it's an avenue for us to all tell our stories collectively through, through workshops, through educational discussions, through campaigns of what are all of us facing and what is our story in it and why do we need this to be solved. I think it'll be so fun actually to see what Pia has to share tonight regarding community building to save journalism, and then also vice versa, like how can we lean on the community journalism here, local broadcasting services like CJSF, on local street papers or local local news outlets, and the alternative independent ones back home that are also trying to do the work of highlighting, the really pressing urgent issues around human rights violations. It's a long ramble to basically say another thing that you can do from tonight and forever and ever is to organize and be a part of community and help tell the stories of yourself and or your coworkers or your friends or your neighbors together.
I was excited by your letter about the event because we don't hear that word as often or as much as we did at other times. And with our phones, every few minutes, even when I have the phone off, something breaks in trying to tell me commercial news, something that's already been edited by the people that own, two interestingly billionaire companies are sending people even notices. I got a note and a warning from one of these companies that because I shared a link, this wasn't a link to how to make bombs. It was a link to a program on our radio station, and they are prohibiting you using any links except links that go to Facebook or to Meta. So I think it was exciting to see you having a meeting because we've been involved since 9 year olds in civil rights movement, women's rights movement, student campus, Black studies programs, a lot of movements. And there was a lot of energy when you come together and can talk. It's wonderful that we're able to talk through Zoom and talk about things, but it's really good to see the excitement from people from different organizations. And someone, one person says, I've got bread and another one's got cheese. We can make a sandwich. But I do want to have one of you tell a little bit more about the Marshall McLuhan event and then some of the things that this person is going to be doing. Help us to understand the representative.
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about that. So maybe just a bit of background on the Marshall McLuhan Fellowship Program. That program is a flagship media advocacy project of the Embassy of Canada in the Philippines. And I think it's been around since 1997, and it's been promoting excellence in journalism in the Philippines for 27 years. And every year, the fellowship is awarded to a journalist in the Philippines to a recipient who embodies outstanding qualities in the field of investigative journalism. So actually, I've had the honor to host the or to co-organize the Marshall McLuhan community talks in Vancouver for the past, I think, 3 to 4 years. And we had another event last year involving another journalist called Judish Kavilan. She also talked about the importance of community building and journalism. So today, our honored guest will be Pia Renata. So Pia is an investigative journalist and senior reporter for Rappler. She was best known for her coverage of the administration of President Rodrigo Duterte. She is currently the community lead at Rappler. And for context, Rappler is a Philippine media outlet. So she's a community lead now for Rappler, and she's responsible for linking journalism with communities for impact and action. So Tonight, Pia will talk specifically on building community-centered journalism in the age of AI, where she will discuss ways of saving journalism through community building. She'll talk about some efforts in her newsroom to bring the work of journalism to readers and citizens in new impactful ways. So I think a lot of these initiatives in the Philippines aim to build trust between journalists and the public that they serve. Because I think one of the sort of trends, at least that I'm personally seeing with certain world leaders, is that there have been a lot of attacks against journalism, and I think there has been sort of an erosion in public trust in media outlets and newsrooms. And maybe some of it is warranted, maybe a lot of it is not. So, so I think tonight's talk will focus on that.
As the embassy of Canada's Marshall McLuhan Fellow of 2024, could you explain just a little bit of the roles of journalists? Oh, the particular titles. I don't think people may be aware of the title of Embassy of the Canada's Marshall McLuhan Fellow. Being a Marshall McLuhan Fellow, I studied Marshall McLuhan back when I was in journalism school. And when I saw his name, I thought, oh my goodness, somebody's talking about Marshall McLuhan. And I think other people might be intrigued to understand the role in journalism and the role in the creation of ideas. Could you just speak to that a moment?
From my understanding, it's an award given to journalists to recognize their outstanding contributions to investigative journalism. Journalism that's particularly critical or enlightening or expository about current issues, social issues. That's kind of the extent to my knowledge. I think it's mainly an honor to some of these journalists who have conducted their important work. And I think what I neglected to mention was that every year these journalists get awarded with the fellowship. And I think specifically, from what I know, because we've been doing it with journalists in the Philippines, they are invited to Canada to go on a speaking tour. So today will just be the Vancouver leg of the trip. I think Pia has spoken in Toronto. I'm not sure if she's spoken in other cities, but the Marshall McLuhan Fellows have this opportunity to sort of talk about their work across Canada.
Afterwards, also, when they go return back to the Philippines, they share in five key cities across the country also to share back to students of communication and members of the local and community media back in the Philippines. So the Marshall McLuhan Fellowship since 1997 has been, 1997, has been part of the Embassy of Canada's advocacy to encourage responsible journalism in the Philippines, with the belief that strong media is essential to a strong democratic society.
Yes, and since we have so much commercial news in the news that mm-hmm. pops up on our phones, who would have known? And that the program provides the winner with a 2-week speaking and familiarization tour of Canada, and there'll be an opportunity for the fellow to interact with media counterparts and to discuss significant current issues on the governance with Canadian officials. So I think there's also going to be academic incubators and some interaction with members of society. So it seems like I was happy that you brought it to our attention, and people can know that that's something that's happening rather than just maybe hearing the words and saying, oh, that's the Philippines, rather than seeing, oh, that's part of us. When it talks about AI, I mean, I know that the presentation isn't being given until tonight, but What do you see as challenges in building community-centered journalism in the age of AI, where people just say some words, you know, the commercials say, oh, you could say anything. You could say, give a few points and we'll write an article. Are there any kind of feedback or thoughts that you have about using, or cautions about using AI?
Well, I think something that's been coming up, and I think Luffy might have spoken to it a little bit earlier too, but just on, it's mostly on misinformation, to be honest. Like immense levels of misinformation and like no disclaimers that, you know, a certain content or a certain image or a video is being used, you know, or is it was created out of a couple words in a prompter. And so some of the challenges that we're facing now is how do we build that media literacy too? Like, especially with what we've seen in previous, especially around election season, whether that's here or in the Philippines, like there are so many false images that come out of certain individuals or politicians or whatever it might be. It's really like, how do we build that media literacy among all of our friends, coworkers, parents, especially seniors too, that have one level of challenge with, you know, accessing technology and then trying to distill then what is the correct versus incorrect or false information on the internet. I think that's something that we're seeing now, especially as the Philippines is currently going into the midterm elections. That's also something that we're trying to do workshops on in our communities too, of like, you know, how do we be critical when we're voting? How do we be critical when we're consuming this information? How can we trust a certain platform? But yeah, I'm not sure if the others have thoughts on AI and challenges.
Yeah, similar to building on what Kai was saying, just a way to combat the disinformation is just to be the community organization that is the face of like these in-person sort of relations with people, so that they already have a baseline understanding of what are the like real conditions, and like exposing the real conditions, so that when they are bombarded with all these things, like they're able to identify what is true and what is not. And building those relationships with people, I think this probably might be a topic, like building the community to like share with each other. So it's not just they have one source of information like Facebook, and it can be very like confusing. But if you have a community that's being centered around exposing the truth and like being rooted in the real conditions, they can always support each other, and like then it's also their responsibility to teach other people how to like media literacy and how to identify when things like don't necessarily make sense with what maybe they're even experiencing themselves. Like if they have family in the Philippines that is going through certain conditions, and then there's media that says, oh, these things don't actually happen here, like even the poverty rate, like there's a lot of misconstruing of the numbers, when in reality we know a lot of our family and a lot of people are experiencing poverty, the numbers don't reflect that. So just having source like alternative sources to understand what is actually happening, and building the community to always share with each other and support each other, I think is a good thing to keep in mind.
I think that was what was exciting about your email that you sent out about attending and hearing the Marshall McLuhan fellow speaker, but that you were also encouraging the community to come out and explore ideas. That idea of exploring ideas moves away from AI, because AI already listened to everything and has made its conclusion and made the best sentence possible or whatever, but it doesn't let you look in the eyes of like, we got three different people, three different kinds of glasses we're wearing, and we say, oh, we all like glasses. But if you during election time and other times, there's this tendency to pit one group against the other, like blaming the shortage of housing on international students, when clearly there are other reasons why the cost of housing or shortage of affordable housing exists. But mm-hmm. when you have sat next to a person in a room and you've seen, you know, what this person, just seeing them, seeing that person there, and then being offered an opportunity to share ideas, because so much of what we're getting, literally, even though I turned my phone off, it turned itself on for something about news. So journalism has always been one of the key pins in a democracy. So I just really thank you and for sending that message, and, you know, letting other people know you're not bringing people together, whether they say to scheme, but to get to understand the commonality of situations and the threats that we might not see when things are just presented in news blurbs about the Philippines or another country. We say, oh, it's just those. Or when we were talking about spices and groceries and things, the farmers, how it was affecting farmers here, or how it was affecting farmers in India. I just salute you on putting something forward to say, come and hear about this issue, or come and see what you can do. Just come and see. You don't have to come and spend money or join anything. So, but it's very important work that you are doing, and I want to say my listeners will say thank you for showing up, speaking up, so we could listen up and hear about things mm-hmm. that we can change and things we can contribute to. Are there any final? Did you give us a connection for Rappler, how people can connect with Rappler?
Rappler is one of the biggest independent news outlets in the Philippines. And so folks can actually just search Rappler, RAPPLER, .com. Yeah, and see some of their news online and on Instagram as well. It's just Rappler. There's also quite a few other alternative media outlets that that Migrante and like the Filipino organizers here like to use also, because a lot of the mainstream media back home, like we just said, doesn't really cover the issues that really matter to the people. So Rappler is one of them. We also look to Alter Media, so ALTERMIDYA. It's like a coalition of alternative and independent news outlets and production companies, as well as Bulatlat, which is BULATLAT. Oh my goodness, I feel like I'm on the spelling bee. But Bulatlat also has received several attacks from the states. And so, you know, is always wanting community support to support local journalism efforts.
Okay, and the one that you said just before that, could you say that, is it a website or a link?
Yes, both of them have websites, Alter Media and Bulatlat both. Both have websites. Unfortunately for us here in Canada, it's harder for us to see them on Facebook, but they do also have Facebooks, and sometimes they show up on my Instagram too.
Yeah, since Facebook and Instagram are owned by the same person, I haven't said anything revolutionary. Sometimes I just have a link to something that someone has said, but anyhow, I've gotten this warning that it's a copyright infringement to send a link to something at our station, or it's a copyright infringement. But they want me to, whatever their ultimate is, it's good to have meetings. It's good to have multiple ways that you let just ordinary people know about what's happening and where there's an opportunity to come and look into the eyes of other people and see their intentions, rather than something that might have been characterized about a group because they were fighting for civil rights or equal rights or journalism rights.
Mm-hmm. Press freedom. And Migrante BC can be reached at migrante.bc@gmail.com or on Instagram at migrante.bc. We are currently waging an anti-labor trafficking campaign called Justice for Victims of the TPLC. And so if there are any folks that are wanting to support, whether you're a journalist, a video producer, a photographer, someone that wants to help out with casework, we're always welcoming people to support. We always need more help with bringing the issues of labor trafficking victims to the forefront, into media and into our communities. And so, yeah, I'll just plug that one in there really quick.
Okay, and what would be the contact point for someone who wants to do volunteer work or just attend a meeting?
They can email migrante.bc.
Okay, spell it, please. Someone is writing, so spell it.
Oh, yes. It is migrante.bc@gmail.com. Okay. It's the best way to get in touch for volunteering.
Okay, well, I appreciate your efforts. I know that people will be hearing about this on Friday, and I'm glad for the links that you've provided that they could go to at any time. And CJSF is a non-political organization. It is a community and student-owned operation. Sometimes people have songs or music, and instead of having to get a producer or think you have to pay a lot to get on, you can bring your music or bring stories to the station. And there are a group of volunteers who listen to music or listen to things, and then that's how it gets played on the station. So we say that's one of the ways that we help Indigenous and other people have access to a station where they can be part of a community, learn what's happening in the community, and just help to make us have a better life. So with that, I'm going to say, what time is it? It's time for us to close out, and it's always love time, poem time. I am your own Sister C, Charlotte Farrell. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Time for poems, poets singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Poem